Being a good parent isn't just about having a set of skills or knowing the right thing to do all the time. Ask any good parent you know. They can tell you their pro tips, but most are happy to admit that a lot of parenting feels like winging it. Who we are and how we continue to grow matters because our kids pick up most of what they learn from us by watching how we do things, not by listening to our instructions. So join me on this journey of remodeling our mindsets so that our actions speak to those watching. I'm Dr. Dina Shelton, and this is Remodel Parenting. Welcome back to Remodel Parenting, everyone. Today we are continuing our developmental series, and we're talking about middle childhood today, the very fun age range of 6 to 11. That's a really wide range, right? And to hear them together in one developmental stage can sometimes feel confusing because if you take a 6-year-old and an 11-year-old and you compare what they can do, how they think, how they engage with their parents, there is a drastic change from the start of this developmental phase to the end of it, probably more so than any other individual stage altogether because of the rapid development that's happening. And so that is a key focus on this stage. Just a reminder as we're going through this developmental series that if you have children in the developmental stage that I'm talking about, it's valuable to hear it. But it's even helpful to hear if your kids are going to be in that stage later, if they have already been through that stage, or just for your own reflection in how you were raised and what you went through during these times. It can help illuminate truths and understanding that can help us in whatever stage of life we're in now or whatever stage our children are in. Middle school can actually be pretty glorious for some kids, while it's really horrible for others. Oftentimes when we talk about middle school or middle childhood ages, people either really light up or you can tell that there is a lot there that challenges them because the things that happen in middle childhood tend to really become part of defining moments of our lives in terms of how we're routed in early years and in childhood to think about the world, and it creates our map where we start from. It doesn't determine everything, but those years are so influential in what's happening in our homes and in our social systems because they're moving from young childhood and towards adolescence. And so there's so many possibilities and they are developing in every way possible. It's great when kids are supported and when they can develop well, but there's so much going on during this stage. I'll just lay it out there and say, no parent is going to catch everything that's going on with kids during these stages and phases. Even parents who do the best that they can and are really involved in their kids' lives, you can't mitigate every problem and issue that's happening because of the very nature of what's going on. Even if your children are at home and you're homeschooling them and you are with them most of the time, the stuff that happens internally are not things that they always even think to talk about or bring up. And so you may not find out about them until later. And so I just say that at the beginning of this process to normalize it and remind you that as parents, it's not all about getting it right the first round. If it was, we would need more clear instructions on each of our children. They would need to come with that manual, right? But we can't. It's about connecting to all of these situations and scenarios when we are aware of them and handling them well as we do. It's during this time that we have the greatest opportunity to start teaching kids how to navigate the world, not just what to do. This age range is where it moves from learning how to be obedient and to comply with what you've been told and trust of adults into a phase of being able to navigate the world themselves and to think critically about things and to start to run parts of their own life in a healthy way. In each of these stages, we're talking about multiple areas of development. The first is physical and mental development. Body development is big during this time. Think about the size of a sixth grader and then the size of a 6-year-old and the size of an 11-year-old when they are in sixth grade, right? And in sixth grade is when a lot of kids start to look like young adults. They begin to look more like adolescents in fifth and sixth grade. It's when it all starts. And so the body is changing rapidly. And physical health, while it's important at every stage, so don't get me wrong with that, but physical health is really key in middle childhood, because if kids are learning about their bodies, how they're growing, and how to keep them healthy, this stage of childhood is key for our ability to teach kids about their bodies and their health, and to understand those things that will code for the rest of their lives and how they are going to take care of their own bodies, their own nutrition, and their own healthy habits. And so it is important as parents to help keep our kids healthy in terms of what they're eating and drinking and what activities that they're doing. But it's also important to help teach them why we have these types of rules, what the rules are for, and really present them more as healthy life habits and not just as rules that they're going to be able to change as they become adults and can, you know, do whatever they want. You hear that sometimes with kids. I can't wait till I'm an adult and I can do whatever I want. And it's really productive to help them catch that vision early. And they can. That's what's so great about this age too, is they really do get it better than we imagine that they will. At this stage too, activities that require motor skill development are vital for healthy body development and brain development. So they have some pretty good rough motor skills, or the ability to move their bodies in larger ways. So they start playing sports during this time frame and can get pretty good at them. Their fine motor skills, like, you know, really precise writing or projects that take really fine tuned movements, they have to have some help with still and have to develop those. But using that knowledge to make sure that they have activities that are developing those are really helpful. And just, again, the power of food and water. Nutrition is so vital for kids, especially during this range. And it has a lot more of an influence on their emotions and their attitudes and their behaviors than we realize, unless they aren't ingesting a lot of sugar and processed foods and things like that. So the more that we can have healthier diets for them and have healthy foods available and teach them to love healthy foods, the better. At this stage, aptitude has to be activated by opportunity and motivation. And what I mean by that is that kids at this age begin to show levels of intelligence that differentiate. And not just, when I say this, I don't just mean regular IQ. General IQ is not the primary indicator of aptitude and achievement. It is an indicator of brain processing and brain function and what the brain is able to do. But we also know that people with really high IQs can also be very overwhelmed and be unmotivated and have less aptitude to do more because of that. And so recognizing that potential in the brain is not the main thing that determines whether someone, especially a child at this age range, is going to be motivated to do something or are going to grow and move forward. And so we look at this stage, we start looking for different types of intelligence. Where do kids excel naturally? What do they lean towards? What are they interested in? And we encourage those activities, those types of things, and especially encourage them in activities that keep them active and healthy. They can really develop love for sports, and that can happen through a lot of ways. Sometimes organized sports is great for that, but also just through camps and other types of exposure, more small and contained experiences, or just casual play. There's so few opportunities for kids to play like a lot of us did when we were growing up, of just kind of getting together in the yards and playing sports or games together. But anytime kids can do that and are playing in real time with their bodies, it's so great. As kids play with their physical bodies, so not sit in a room together and on screens together, but as they are moving their bodies around, especially outdoors, especially on the ground, rolling, running, jumping, twisting, turning, climbing, all types of things, some things that feel a little dangerous, their brain and body are connecting in those play processes, and development and growth are happening. When there's not enough of that, it changes how kids' brains develop. I could do probably a whole series on that, but just trust me on that fact that the requirement for physical movement and regulation is so important for healthy brain development and especially healthy emotional regulation development. We know more now than we ever have about neurodiversity. And with neurodiversity, I mean those differences in how brains think and how brains process and function. And used to, we just called neurodiverse brains, brains that maybe were on the autism spectrum or had ADHD. That's still a common way to describe them. But what we also know is there's no real normal brain scan. There's nothing really normal about how brains work. Everything's different, and people create their own hacks and ways of navigating things. And so kids are doing the same thing, but they're really high development during this time. It's so rapid and kids change so fast. So how they think and feel and what they focus on can be one thing one day and one thing the next. Completely different, and we just kind of have to go with it and connect with them because that's normal. And so that can help us chill out a little bit when things aren't going the way that we wish they were. If you've had kids in this stage, any of these stages, remember the times that it was like, is this phase ever going to be over? And then now you realize, oh, that phase was over, but I didn't realize when it was over, and it wasn't something that I realized right in the aftermath either, because it's on down the line that we realize, oh, we just haven't had those issues in a while, or that hasn't been hard in a while. This is also a high time because of school that diagnoses may present. So if a kid has any learning disabilities, has ADHD or any other type of emotional or social or internal issue, those diagnoses are more likely to happen. And so helping kids understand if that is part of their life, helping them understand and have language for what's going on, not just hear adults talking about them around them, but them being part of it. It's their life and their world at every age in this range is important. And it's okay. Sometimes people can say, well, I don't want them to know that they have ADHD. I don't want them to feel like they're weird. And that's true to a certain extent. You don't want kids to feel like they're ostracized for what is going on, but not letting a kid in on what's happening with them is potentially more damaging than knowing something is different and knowing that something has to be accommodated. Otherwise, they can feel more like a science project. Like everybody's looking at them. They know something's going on, but they have no idea what it is. If you can imagine being in that situation, we as adults would not take that very well either. With cognitive development, we think about how kids think. This age group is developing what Piaget called concrete operational thought. So they have more logic and concrete processes. It's based on what is seen or is present. But there's less abstraction. It's not as theoretical. But so that's why the physical learning is important. And the way that kids are educated, it makes a difference. But they can really struggle to answer abstract questions. So asking kids in this age range, and quite frankly, you know, spoiler alert, adolescents too, why did you do that? You're going to get an I don't know, and that's typically true. They can't really answer that question well. And even the answers that they give may have some accuracy in them, but you're not getting the content that you're trying to get to, no matter the age of the kid in this range. And so it's important. One of my best tips for kids at this age range and even on into adolescence is as much as you can speak and talk and engage with them in concrete language and concrete interactions, the better. So instead of saying, why did you do that? Walk them through the steps of what they did. This is what you did. What were you thinking or why did you do that? And then you did this. What were you thinking at that point? Why did you make that choice? They can usually answer those pieces one at a time, but if you, and then by the end of it, you can ask them, so this whole thing happened because why? And then they may be able to tell you that's concrete to abstract. And kids in this age range can go from concrete things to an abstract concept. They cannot do the other way around. It does not work in their brain this way yet. And so we have to understand that, or we end up really frustrated too with their responses and how they're answering, because we know they know why they did, you know, we know that they did it on purpose. We know that they did these things, and the answers may seem like they are more evasive than they really are if we're not aware of this part. Education through memorization and repetition are not the most effective at this age. In fact, a great study was done and plenty of research has been done to show that if you are teaching kids a concept like don't touch a gun, you can't just talk to them about it and tell them what to say or what to do. You have to actually role play it with them and have them practice it for it to sink in. Otherwise, it's not overly helpful or productive. It's important during this stage to automate skills and practice for habits. And by that, when we say automate skills and practice, It's getting kids in routines and having them do the same things over and over again for longer periods of time so that it becomes processes. So kids having regular chores and dividing them up so everyone's doing something different and having them do the same chores over and over, it's great. Having them run their own things, getting ready for school every morning and getting all of their stuff in one place or in the car, you know, at a certain time frame. Those types of automated practices are beneficial because they help them learn to hone their own brain in and focus it where it needs to be. The other thing is our engagement with our cognitive control processes is vital at this time. And that is in metacognition and emotional regulation. And those are just really big words for us talking to them about how they're thinking and feeling and helping them process the hows and whys. Because as they do that, it not only helps them understand themselves better, but it helps them learn better overall. And it's the process, because it's the process by which we organize all of our thoughts and our emotions and things about it. And so when we're helping them guide that and say, you know, as you're learning this, you're trying to remember it, but you're getting very frustrated and it's overwhelming you, and that's not helping you learn. So let's take some breaks. When you feel this way, take a break, take some breaths, and then come back to it. And when we teach them the hows and those in-betweens, and we help them understand that their process is just as important as the task that they're doing, they start to build that skill for life as well. Concrete thought helps them use logic and make assertions like finding out, it's context, like finding out what words mean, even if they've never heard the word before. They can use context clues differently. And so those are things that can be expected too for them to pick up on context. And we can help navigate that as well. But their concrete thought processes and context, they're not sharp. And so they only go with the logic that they know, but because their brains work this logically now, they're convinced that they're right. If you've ever talked to a 6 to 11-year-old about anything they've learned at school, it's only based on what they have learned and what they know. But if you alter any of it or if you try to explain anything else, they may come back at you on it because now they have learned it and it feels very concrete that they are the expert on it now. But it's also a time during this process to help kids learn context of social situations. So things like how to talk to adults versus children, that we have different language and different ways that we do that when we're engaging with an adult. And these have to be really specific for a lot of kids. Not every kid just picks this up by watching adults do things. It's, hey, when you meet another adult, you need to stand up straight. You need to look at them in the eye. You need to shake their hand and say hello. Or, you know, if they ask to, you know, if they, you know, ask to shake your hand, if you don't, you know, if you don't want to hug them, you don't have to. Giving them the rules for those types of things. Sometimes kids don't want to hug other adults. How's the appropriate way to do that? And so giving your kids language and saying, you know, if you don't prefer to hug an adult, you can say, I don't prefer a hug, but can I give you a high five? Or something along those lines. And helping kids navigate that process, giving them the roadmap to use, makes them feel more confident in those situations. Because the way that we communicate with them builds how they communicate and connect to the rest of the world. Now, when we get to psychosocial development, we're talking about Erikson stages, and this is where we have industry versus inferiority. So these are the verses and these life goals and things that have to be surmounted during these areas. So the main thing kids are focused on in this area, and it makes sense during this time frame, is adjusting and coping with the new demands as they're entering school and learning. Learning is one of the biggest focuses and impactful events of their lives during this whole age range. And so success in being able to accomplish their task at school and do things makes a kid feel like they're competent and good and they can bring something to the world. But when they fail a lot and they feel like failures, they feel that inferiority and they can fear trying new things. So in this stage, they've got to learn to take care of themselves in many ways. It's good for kids to, like I said earlier, to have chores and maintain responsibility, to learn how to manage some money, to time themselves on things and to come through in time, to comply with time constraints, to oversee their own homework, including projects. Yes, including projects at age-appropriate levels all the way through, but having autonomy and oversight in some of this, to be responsible for others, pets, younger children at appropriate ages, and to have some independence. They learn how to apply what they're being taught and they have to learn how to sustain their efforts to see results. So during this stage, kids are learning how to read. And for kids earlier, learning comes fast. So when they're learning colors, it's once they get red and they can identify red, they get a lot of really positive feedback. With reading, to be a good reader, you have to sustain learning longer and you have to try harder and try longer before you're good at it. And this is where they learn that skill. They're actually really motivated to learn at this age, unless social learning tells them not to be. And so kids are naturally very curious and they want to learn about things, but they pick up the idea that being smart or being interested in things is not very cool, whether that's from school or home or other people, older siblings, that kind of thing, then they may start to act like that as well. And so really navigating and encouraging healthy curiosity and healthy thought, and especially watching how we speak about education and school, the kids' schooling, because these kids are so concrete. When we say things or say negative things about teachers or the school, they take that and make it their template. And that's the logical thing. And so if something is not right with school, they may take that as a blanket scenario and decide that it's really not worth it or they don't have to try. It's really interesting how the logic works in their heads. If you have kids or have had kids at this stage, you know exactly what I'm talking about in terms of their logic. Their self-concept adjusts significantly during this stage, from just being positive for no reason to a really logical but maybe bad logic sometimes process. So this is where you get kids start to have body image issues. As their bodies are changing and they're comparing their body to other people, they may start to feel insecure. This is where if they don't do well in a certain subject or have to get extra help in something, they may start to speak negatively about themselves. So we have to watch for that and help guide that language. We want kids to have healthy self-esteem, but that does come from, especially in this age, because kids have a meter for when adults are not being honest with them. Kids know when they don't do well at things. Kids know when they're not the best at things. And sometimes they still want people to tell them that they're the best. But the truth is they trust adults who tell them the truth. And so it is important to remember that a healthy self-concept comes with knowing where we're good and where we need to work and where we have areas that are not as good and where we have areas that we failed, and to be loved and connected with in those places. Kids don't need to be told that everything about them is great. They need to be able to see that what's good about them may be the same things that are good in others, but other people may be good at things that they're not, and we can celebrate those and connect with them too. And that only comes from practice and us modeling that for them. But that helps, that we help that by how we engage in that area. And as parents, our kids' self-esteem oftentimes relates more to our own self-esteem than what we say about our kids. They don't listen to us tell them that they're great. If we tell them that they're great, they may or may not think that they're great. If we say that, if we are always talking negative about ourselves, our bodies, our mistakes, the way that we do things, things we're disappointed in our own life, if they hear that a lot, that's what they're going to pick up and pattern for their own life. They're not going to take you saying, well, you're great, but I'm not that great. You're beautiful, but I don't like my body. Daughters in those scenarios, if they're hearing that type of like negative body image, they're going to pick that up. They're not going to listen to you about their body if you're not comfortable in your own skin. Building resilient kids during this process is all about moving through adversity. So calling adversity what it is, helping them determine steps and plans and navigating it together. And there is a lot of adversity that can come. This is a time of childhood where things like divorce and moving, sickness, loss and grief, socioeconomic status issues, and other things can affect child's outcomes in school, in life in general. And while kids at every stage need to be protected from, abuse and neglect and things like that, they really don't have to be sheltered from hard things. Kids do hard things better than grownups do most of the time. They have a healthier concept. They're not overcomplicating it. They need guidance on how to process it, but they don't need adults hiding things from them and giving them no information, because again, kids pick that up, especially during this age range. They pick it up and then they feel like they've been lied to. They don't trust the adults around them if they realize that big things have been going on, they've known it, but no one will give them the information. Friendships take a central role during this time and provide a navigation point for kids and how they're going to run through the world. And so knowing kids' friends, intentionally having kids with other families and children that you want them to grow up to be like. But then this whole meta processing that we talked about, teaching kids how to make good friends, how to tell if someone is a good friend or not. How do you have good boundaries and conversations? And they hear these. I used to teach my daughter about good boundaries and conversations, and I would tell her what types of things to say, and she didn't learn it at all. At least it didn't seem like that. And then one day she came home and she told me about a friend, and she said, well, I told her we may not be friends moving forward because I said to her, I want to be close to you, but when you lie to me, it pushes me away. And then we feel a lot of distance between us. And so if you keep lying to me, it will just push us further and further away and we won't get what we want. And so I told her that, Mom, and I laughed so hard because I had never told her to tell it to a friend. That's what I had told her about lying. And so again, we so often see them repeating our content with them and our content with the world than just what we tell them to do. They're learning experientially. So either by watching us experience the world and how we respond and react to it, or how we respond and react to them in scenarios. So when your kids are going through things at this age, it's easy to write off some of it as kid stuff and just say, oh, middle school is awful and, you know, you'll get through it just like everybody else and kids are just dumb. And there's some truth in those types of statements, but oftentimes kids need to hear adults connect with them because this is their whole life. It is the big things for them. It is the larger concepts. And they have to be taken more seriously, just like we would want our big things taken seriously, and navigating through that and helping guide them. The other thing is that empathy has to be taught, and this age range is very important for that development too. Empathy is not an emotion or a feeling. Empathy is a practice. It's the ability to see the world from the lens of another person, to kind of step into their space and see the world differently from what I automatically see it. And so it's when someone else is hurting, but I'm not, then I can connect with why and how they're hurting. I don't have to feel the same hurt to have empathy and compassion for someone else. But we have to teach, slow kids down and teach them how to pause and stop and enter that space of another person and practice empathy. We all can grow in empathy, and it is something that is moving during this time frame, and that a lot of it is developed in how it's going to map for kids in early adulthood. In this stage, as far as parenting goes, consistency is key. Everything is developing. Sometimes it can feel like things change overnight, but most things, it doesn't happen like a light switch. It's not like we give a good set of consequences and then we never have the same issue again. These things are growing and developing over time. So whatever it is that your kids are struggling with during this area, it's important to hang in there for the long term and to know that even if you don't see the results immediately, that your consistency in the discipline and the choices that you've made and the communication you've given to them is what's going to have the overall outcomes long term, not just, and sometimes not in the here and now, but as they are moving through the stage and moving into the next stage, that it will have the outcomes that we're looking for. And as always, these are time frames where we get confused or when things feel frustrating or difficult. You know, I've disclosed this many times, but it was especially during these age ranges that when stuff felt really confusing to me and I wasn't sure, I would go see a counselor. And I would take what was going on with my kids and go talk to someone else, not with them, but just for me. And usually within a few sessions, it was sorted out. And it was things that I was thinking, expectations I had on myself that I didn't really realize or I had not brought into my, like the front part of my brain where I knew that that was what was happening. Things like if my kid isn't, you know, is doing the same things and nothing's getting better, even though I'm being consistent and disciplined, then I'm failing as a parent. Well, you know, all of us might say in real time, oh, well, I know that I'm not failing as a parent if my kid's, you know, struggling. But in the moments, there's a lot that we carry of that. If there was any indication that that is true at any point in our lives. So don't hesitate to reach out and get help and get guidance and get counseling or coaching or mentoring or classes, small groups at church, anything that can support you during this time, even just to hear other people say, oh yeah, my kid too. I'm glad that you listened to this episode on middle childhood, and join us for the next episode on adolescence. Thank you so much for listening to Remodel Parenting. If you know someone who could benefit from this episode, I hope you'll share it with them. And if you love what we're doing, like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you have topics you'd like to hear about, email us at info@theremodelproject.com.